And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we react to Thursday night football and we preview the weekend that's ahead of us. We'll run through all of the conference championship games. Who has the greatest chance of being upset? Which will be the best one to watch? How will it impact the playoff? We'll get ready for championship weekend in college football, which begins tonight. Plus, we'll preview this weekend in the NFL as well. Got some thoughts on Notre Dame, their new coach, and a theory that I have about college football. Plus, fake accents, best games of the football weekend, get to our picks later on, and a whole lot more throughout the afternoon as we get ready for a busy, important, huge football weekend that begins tonight in the Pac-12. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook, ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head on over to our website, click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on a football Friday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, it's not just a football Friday. It's a championship football Friday.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have the college conference championships. We even have the South Carolina High School League state championships tonight and tomorrow.
Oh, how about that?
So this is not your normal football weekend.
No, it's not. And especially once you head into December, even for the NFL, games become much more important now that we head into the last full month. That's what you love about football is that there's fewer games, so they all carry more importance. And once you get to this time of year, they're all incredibly important. So we'll get to all of this throughout the afternoon. Let me start briefly with what we saw last night on Thursday Night Football because I have just a couple of takeaways from that game. The Cowboys beating the Saints, and the Cowboys get a much-needed victory. The Saints now have lost 5 in a row for the first time in Sean Payton's career. And have you heard Keyshawn Johnson saying on the morning show throughout this week he thinks Sean Payton leaves New Orleans at the end of the season? Wouldn't that be something? You suddenly lose your Hall of Fame quarterback, your offense isn't so good, and you'd bail right away after being there for 15 years? We'll see if that's the case. But it's also interesting that, and in Payton's defense, this would probably be the case for just about any other coach, when you take away the amount of weapons the Saints have lost from last year to this. Haven't had Kamara for much of this season. No Michael Thomas. Drew Brees is gone. Injuries on the offensive line. But just like we talk about with quarterbacks, right? If you're going to be this offensive genius, you should be able to do some things offensively even when you aren't at full strength. And Taysom Hill showcased last night that he is not an NFL quarterback. I'll continue to say it until I'm blue in the face. He should never throw another pass again unless it's some sort of trick play. 4 interceptions last night. A couple of those were brutal, especially the last one. And the Cowboys, led by Dan Quinn, get some more turnovers. That's where Dallas is really good. When they can play with a lead, that's when their defense is at its best. They can get interceptions, they can get turnovers, and they can give you short fields and score points defensively and pull away like they did last night. When they're playing in a nip-and-tuck game or a back-and-forth game, not so much. That's why during this losing streak, we could have a chicken-and-the-egg discussion, but during the losing streak or the struggles in the past month for the Cowboys, they haven't been getting as many turnovers. because when they're in close games and teams can still run it and they can be balanced, it's not as easy to get those turnovers. But when you know a team has to pass and you can come after the quarterback and you can be a little aggressive with your ball-hawking defensive backs, you're prone to more interceptions, turnovers, shorter fields, more offensive points. For the Cowboys last night, that was a perfect matchup for them against Taysom Hill. You build a lead against a struggling team, force them to throw. Taysom Hill's the one that has to throw, and then you can unleash the dogs once again, like that defense has been able to do for the majority of this season. For the Saints, with Sean Payton, you're seeing, I don't want to be too hard on Sean Payton again because of all the injuries, but you're seeing the difference in him, this offense, this team, when you take away a Hall of Fame quarterback. Just like we were talking about Brady and Belichick a year ago, but the difference is Sean Payton is the offensive coach. That's his baby, the offense. And you take away that Hall of Fame quarterback, and now you're down to a Taysom Hill or a Trevor Siemian and the difference that it makes. On the flip side for the Cowboys, Dak Prescott is somewhat similar. I didn't think he played great last night, but good enough certainly for the Cowboys to get a win as they got a bunch of their pieces back on offense. Dak Prescott this year is just 20th in QBR. And if you're going to pay a quarterback the amount of money that they paid Dak, you have to have a quarterback that you know can perform when they don't have all of the pieces around him. He hasn't had all the pieces lately, at least prior to last night, and really hasn't been good enough. Touchdown-interception ratio is about even on the road. When you look at Dak Prescott against teams that have winning records, you know, not so hot. It was the concern with devoting that much money to Dak Prescott, because when you do that, you have to make sure that quarterback can win no matter what. And for Dak throughout his career, it seems like he needs a lot of those pieces to be at his best. He was good enough to win last night for the Cowboys. I still haven't been all that impressed with them offensively or just overall over the past month. That was a good matchup for them against the Saints. And now New Orleans, they've lost 5 in a row, which, hey, if you're a Falcons or Panthers fan, not only can you take joy in seeing the Saints lose once again, but also the Falcons and Panthers still somehow are very much in the race for a playoff spot in the NFC. The Saints are one of the teams they're competing with, and New Orleans just got knocked another peg down. Right? They just got knocked further down in the playoff rankings, so that too helps the Falcons and the Panthers in this whole thing. All right, let me shift to this, because last night's game, Thursday Night Football, wasn't all that great. Taysom Hill, my big takeaway is Taysom Hill. I don't know what the Saints see in him or Sean Payton. They keep giving him these contracts. They love him. They make him the starting quarterback. In his defense, he had a play with a splint on his throwing hand in the second half. I don't know why that's wise and why they came out throwing it as much as they did. He's able to move the football when he runs it, but Taysom Hill's not an NFL quarterback. And the quicker the Saints realize that, the better off they'll be. Let me shift to this, though. We have more important and better games going on this weekend in college football with all the championship games, most notably Alabama and Georgia. Coming up in just a little bit, I will rank the conference championship games in terms of most intriguing and give you my keys or numbers that stand out to me about the matchups this weekend. But of course, number one on the list, I can already tell you, is Alabama and Georgia. And Alabama-Georgia, I got into this on the show yesterday. Everything points in Georgia's direction except the fact that it's Alabama and it's Nick Saban and the history between Alabama and Georgia. But sometimes we can have a hard time changing our perception. It's like a high school reunion. Alabama-Georgia could be like a high school reunion tomorrow in the sense that you went to high school however many years ago, and you went to school and there were certain people at the school. You had all your different groups, different cliques, and different people fit different profiles. You had the jocks, and you had the popular kids, and you had the goths. Depending on when you went, you may have had different classifications of people. And that's how you always remember them or think of them. You ever walk into a store, maybe you return home for the holidays, or you still live in the area, but you haven't seen some of your classmates in a while, and you go into a store and you see a kid who maybe he was like a goth back in the day, used to wear all black, and he'd wear lipstick, and he had crazy earrings, and he had like a mohawk, and you walk into a store, and now he's all buttoned up. And you certainly don't recognize him at first, but then even once you realize that's who it is, like, you have a hard time seeing him like that. Like, I can't believe it. That's what he looks like now. He looks so different. You show up to that reunion all those years later, and, you know, the girls that were the it girls in high school, yeah, they've, you know, put on a couple of pounds. They haven't taken care of themselves. They don't look so good. Same with the guy, right? The guy who had the great hair and everybody liked him, and he was the talented high school quarterback. Yeah, he's put on some pounds. He's been divorced. He doesn't look so good either. Life's beating him up a little bit. And then vice versa. Some of the kids that were overlooked in high school, right, they had what kids now call a glow-up as they grew up. and they got better and they were successful and they show up well-dressed and they have the nice career, and it's like, ooh, that's the person you want to get to know. You give it a few years and you have these perceptions from high school, but then you show up to the reunion, you realize things have changed. But at first, you still see people through that prism of high school. That's how you've remembered them for years. Or maybe somebody at work or a friend, right? You can struggle to change how you view them. Maybe they were, a thin guy with a great head of hair for all those years. And then they start going bald. They put some pounds on. But when you describe them to somebody else, you'd still describe them as if they looked how they did 10 years ago, because that's how you remember them. That's how you see them in your mind. I say all that because for Alabama, Georgia, we look back in recent years as we get ready for this game. We think back to those past matchups or the past seasons when Alabama was the dominant team and Georgia couldn't clear that hurdle. But this year is like the high school reunion, say, 20 years later, when you had all of these perceptions. You haven't seen any of your classmates in 20 years. You remember them a certain way. And then you show up to the reunion and you realize everything's different. That's not who they are anymore. Things have changed. Right? The best-looking people aren't the best-looking people anymore. And the people you couldn't give a second thought to in high school, they're actually the cool, more successful ones that you want to get to know. Alabama is now kind of Georgia, and Georgia's become Alabama. It's a role reversal between these two. And sometimes we struggle to see the changes. So going into this game, the thought process is Nick Saban, better quarterback, heavy underdog. Alabama's had success against Georgia. There's no way Georgia can beat Alabama. But of course we know things change over time. Maybe hard to see it, but things can change, and that's the case here. It's almost like King of Queens, the TV show, and they have a football reunion, and Spence, who was like the manager of the football team, and he used to get bullied by the players, they have the football team come over to Doug's house, and they're watching the film, and Spence has been waiting for years. I don't know how long this was removed from high school, 10, 15 years. He was waiting for this moment to get back at the bullies now that they're all adults. That's Kirby Smart. He's been waiting, hasn't had to wait 10 to 15 years, only three, for this opportunity. 0-3 against Alabama. And in all three games, Georgia has blown a lead. In fact, if you start keeping score, when Georgia had their largest lead in all three games, from that point on, they have been outscored 64-3. So when Georgia hits their peak against Alabama, the rest of those games, they've been outscored 64-3. It hasn't even been close. But this is the chance for Kirby Smart. Like the kid who was, you know, bullied or overlooked in high school, showing up to the reunion, and now he's really successful. And, he's cleaned up his acne, and he looks much better. And he's got a nice car, and he's got a nice suit on. And he can't wait to get back in there and throw it in everyone's face. That things have changed. I'm no longer who you thought I was. That's Georgia against Alabama tomorrow. This could be like Alabama in 2009. The last time an underdog won an SEC championship game was Alabama all those years ago. Now, this is a little bit different because Georgia is not an underdog. They're the favorite, at least in the eyes of Vegas, but many still doubt them. And you go back to Alabama in 2009 when Saban first came in the conference. And in his second year in 2008, Alabama lost to Florida in the SEC championship game, lost by double digits. And that was, of course, when Florida, they were flying high with Urban Meyer, and they were the team to beat. And Saban just got to Alabama, and his first year, he didn't do much. And then his second year, you know, they were better, but they still couldn't get past Florida. And then his third year, in 2009, they got to the SEC championship game, and they dominated Florida. And they beat him by 20. And they went on, and they won the national championship. And as they say, the rest is history. That got Alabama rolling. They couldn't get past Florida at first. They found a way to beat them in 2009, and it started the dynasty that they've had ever since. I'm not telling you Georgia's going to be the next Alabama dynasty, but this is their opportunity. If you get over this hurdle, you've been pounding your head against that wall the last couple years, losing all three matchups and blowing leads in all three games. If you can get past them here, and this is the chance to do it. When Georgia has their best team, Alabama has the worst team during this time frame, and you get this win, Georgia then, I believe this is their toughest test. If you get past Alabama, I think things only get easier for them in the playoff. And if you win that national championship, I'm not telling you Georgia's going to be a dynasty, but it's their opportunity to at least start it. And who knows, you know, how long Saban's going to hang around. He's already 70. Yeah, he'll probably coach another 5 years. Is he going to coach until his 80s, right? Do we have another decade of Nick Saban? He's kind of winding out the end of this whole thing. And this is the chance for Georgia to first clear that hurdle and then to try to take over moving forward in the SEC. You know, the Braves already ended their narrative this year. And that's something they talked about during their playoff run when they were up 3-1 and the concerns about them blowing another series against the Dodgers. It's the perfect opportunity. You ever have a screw-up in your life? Wouldn't you wish you could have a redo? Kirby Smart keeps getting the opportunities for redos. This is now the fourth matchup. They've blown leads and lost the first three. He made a dumb decision on a fake punt with 3 minutes to go. What was that, 2018? This is another opportunity for that redo. And even better for Smart and Georgia because they're in a better position now than any of those other games. The Braves already took care of it this year. Right, the Braves, you had a lot of bad memories, and you would only view them as the team that choked over the past, whatever, 20 years, and they made up for it this year by winning the World Series. For Georgia, it's a similar thing. You can make up for all that this weekend by beating Alabama. They say it takes seven good impressions to erase one bad impression. Now, this has been more than just one bad first impression for Kirby Smart. It's been like a nightmare where it continues. Three consecutive bad impressions to begin. We would all love the opportunity to wipe out a bad impression. You ever get off on the wrong foot with the in-laws? They say it takes seven good impressions after that. Show up with flowers at the door the next seven times. Maybe then you'll be back on equal footing. Well, for here, for Kirby Smart, it's not going to take seven wins against Alabama. It's only going to take one. And it's going to have to come tomorrow. Here was Booger McFarland on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday talking about this game and what it's going to take in Georgia, Alabama, the SEC title game tomorrow.
The key to the game is Bryce Young has to be who he has been advertised as, which is, I think he's the best quarterback in the country, Paul. So if Bryce Young can be that, then Alabama has a chance. Alabama's defense is not the greatest Nick Saban has ever had, but it's a good one. So they got to play above their head. Georgia's got 10 to 11 pros on their defense. It's going to be tough for Alabama to score a lot of points on this team. So this game, in my mind, for Alabama to win, it's got to be in the teens. It's got to be 17-14. It's got to be 21-17. And Bryce Young has to be who I think he is, which is the best quarterback in America. And, Paul, I'll leave you on this note. All the Georgia fans, I would ask them one question. If not now, Paul, when? If you can't beat him with the best team you've ever had, if you can't beat him with the best defense that Kirby's ever had, if you can't beat him when you're favorite in Vegas, then when are you going to beat Nick Saban?
Booger talking yesterday on the Feinbaum show about this game. And that's certainly the case, right? If you can't win now, when will you? When you're a 6.5-point favorite, when you're clearly the best team in college football, when Alabama's having a down year. In fact, Georgia this year is like Alabama the first half of that Saban dynasty run, where you don't have the elite quarterback, but you play really good defense, and you win in the trenches, and you can run the football, and you're a physical team. And Kirby Smart, of course, were on those teams, and now that's what he's built for at least this year at Georgia. But you have to finish it off. Nick Saban, 5-0 in his career against number one teams in the postseason. That's what's on deck tomorrow. It is hard to doubt Nick Saban in a game like this. He's only been an underdog five times. He's won outright four of the five. They usually don't lose games, or certainly don't lose games by multiple scores when it's expected. Right? They usually don't go into a game when you know Alabama, oh yeah, they're two scores worse than this team, and then it actually plays out that way. But it really says something that Alabama has the better head coach, the better quarterback in this matchup. It's at a neutral site, and yet they're still a 6.5-point underdog. That's how much better Georgia is in all the other areas. It will come down to the defenses on each side. You know, last year Alabama blitzed Stetson Bennett more than any other team, and he played very poorly against Alabama with multiple interceptions. He's been better this year. He has more experience now. Maybe he'll be more collected tomorrow to handle any pressure Alabama may throw their way or just the pressure of this SEC championship game. And on the flip side, for Alabama going up against this Georgia defense, it's going to take home runs to score enough points against this defense. And Alabama, with their issues in the offensive line, as we saw last week in the Iron Bowl, without their starting running back, and with their struggles this year just running the football, it may actually help Alabama going into this game if they realize we shouldn't even bother running the football. Now, coaches will tell you it's about the quantity of running the football and the quality of throwing the football. That even if you're only getting 2 yards per carry, it's important to still hand it off just to keep the defense honest and to set up the pass game. even if it's like pounding your head against the wall. But Alabama has struggled to run the football this year. Against the SEC, they averaged just 3.5 yards per carry, fourth worst in the conference. They're going to struggle to run it tomorrow, and you may be better off knowing that going in. You know what they say about like the smartest people or the most successful people in the world? They're there because they know what they don't know. They don't think they have all the answers. They have a lot of the answers. They're really smart, but they're also smart enough to know what they do know and what they don't know. And what they don't know, they go resource that to other people. And that's similar to Alabama. If you know what you can and can't do going into this game, I think you could put together a better game plan that you come out swinging and say, we can't try to just run it against them. We're not going to be able to. We got to try to beat them through the air. Let's try to get some home runs with Bryce Young. Let's try to make some things happen through the air with our quarterback throwing the football. And instead of wasting time pounding your head against that wall hoping to break a few runs tomorrow, Alabama may be better off if they realize, yeah, you know what? That's one of our weaknesses in this matchup. Let's play to our strengths. And I don't know how many strengths they'll have on offense tomorrow, but you can at least take your chances by trying to put it in the air. For Alabama against this defense tomorrow, you're going to need some home runs, and maybe you rely even less on the run game. And knowing that going in could be half the battle. Instead of figuring out as the game unfolds, like, oh, we can't run against these guys. If you know that the week prior, you game plan all week, thinking, hey, we know we can't rely on the run game. Let's find some other ways to beat this defense. It's not going to be easy, but it's the challenge for Alabama tomorrow. Coming up, this is obviously the most notable conference championship game of the weekend. But when we come back, we will rank the conference championship games in terms of the ones that are most intriguing, and I'll give you my thoughts on each of them. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you.
Coming up, we rank the conference championship games this weekend by the ones that are most intriguing. Plus, I'll give you my thoughts and takeaways as we preview all the games this weekend in college football here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. This is too joyous of a version of Blue Christmas. This doesn't sound blue at all. This sounds joyful.
This is the one you play at the Christmas parties.
Yeah, that's true. But why don't you pick a different song to do? Because it goes against the whole point of the song. You can't do this song upbeat.
Could you imagine Porky Pig doing this version?
Oh, yeah. Again with the Porky Pig. Everyone's favorite. They would love it if Porky Pig did this version. We'll get to my picks later on. I had thoughts of Porky Pig dancing and singing in my head, distracting me. We'll get to my picks later on this afternoon. I'll give you a tasty top five later on this afternoon that focuses solely on the NFL. But right now, let's focus on college football. I'm going to rank the conference championship games in terms of order of the highest watchability rate, if that's a word, right? The ones you want to watch the most. The best games to watch this weekend in college football from number 1 to 6 of the conference champions, and also give you my thoughts and preview of each of these games. Now, the SEC theme is our go-to, but in this case, it applies. It's appropriate because number 1 is the SEC championship. That's clear. We opened the show talking about it this afternoon. And the big question is if Georgia can clear that hurdle to get past Alabama. There's never been a better opportunity than now to get it done. Cherish the moment, Kirby Smart. It's a chance to alter your legacy and make up for those bad first impressions. We all wish we had the opportunity. Now, can Georgia cash in tomorrow and take advantage of said opportunity against Alabama? Obviously, number 1, the game to watch this weekend, the SEC title game. 2 top 3 teams, plus Alabama battling for a playoff spot, Georgia trying to remain number 1. After that, the second best conference championship game of the weekend is one that has no impact in the college football playoff. So in terms of level of importance, this is not number 2, but in terms of the enjoyment of the game, I think this will be number 2. It's this game I'm looking forward to the most outside of the SEC title game. It's the ACC Conference Championship. first time since 2010 that we will have an ACC champion not named Clemson or Florida State. Wake Forest and Pittsburgh will battle instead tomorrow. They have one conference title between the two of them all time. It was Wake Forest 15 years ago. The reason why this game is so intriguing to me, even when it doesn't carry much in terms of the playoff picture, is because of the quarterback matchup. You have two top five offenses in the country. You have two of the top quarterbacks. You should see a lot of points. I think it'll be a high-flying, high-scoring, fun game. Two quarterbacks throwing it all over the place. The difference to me in this game, Wake Forest's defense is not good. We've seen that all year. We saw that against Clemson. But Pittsburgh's defense isn't bad. In fact, they led the ACC in sacks this year. They had at least five sacks in half of their games this year. And when they reached five sacks, they went 6-0. So that's the difference to me. Wake Forest's defense is not good. Kenny Pickett should have a field day. On the flip side, Pittsburgh's defense can get after the quarterback enough, they can make things difficult on Sam Hartman, who was pressured on a third of his dropbacks this year. So the Wake Forest offensive line is vulnerable against a blitzing team. And when Hartman is throwing under pressure, he had completed fewer than half of his passes. So that's not good. That's not a good recipe for him and Wake Forest against Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh wins this game, but I think we see a lot of points. I think it should be a lot of fun. And this is a showcase for Kenny Pickett. This game, the bowl game, this is when scouts are paying closer attention. It's a bigger game, theoretically the biggest of his career. I think Kenny Pickett's going to be the best quarterback in the upcoming draft. So this is a big spot for him, and I think he's going to have a big day that really will impress some scouts, some teams. It will probably lead to a team overdrafting him next year. But I think Kenny Pickett plays well and Pittsburgh wins. Number three on the list of most interesting games, I'm going to the American, the AAC Conference Championship. Cincinnati against Houston, two ranked teams. This is the biggest game for Cincinnati yet. It is now bigger than Notre Dame. It's bigger than Georgia last year because of what's on the line. They know that they're a top four team. You assume if Cincinnati wins here, they're in the playoff. So you imagine the players, Luke Fickell, they all know that. They can make history if they win this game, not only by winning the conference, but then becoming the first group of five to go to the playoff and having a chance to actually go try to win a national championship. How will they handle a moment like that? They've handled all of the moments so far the last 2 years. They've never been overwhelmed. But this is the biggest spot yet. Meanwhile, for Houston, Dana Holgorsen's a pretty good coach. They can score some points. Their quarterback, just as good. You never hear about him. He's just as good as Ritter on the Cincinnati side. Cincinnati's favored by 11 in this game. I think Cincinnati wins. They finish the job. They go to the playoff. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is a one-possession, fourth-quarter type of game and Houston hangs there right there with them. I think we could see two pretty good offenses. It won't be as high-scoring as the ACC, but maybe pushing towards 30 for these two teams. I think it'll be a good close game, but I think Cincinnati finishes the job. Number four on my list is the Big 12. Not often do you think of the Big 12 and you think of defense, but that's the case here. Top two defenses in the conference, which goes along with my theory of sometimes when everyone's zigging, you should zag. The Big 12's always been about offense. Well, the best two teams this year are now about defense. And apparently, Big 12 fans love it because this is the most expensive championship ticket in the Big 12 in 5 years. People want to go see Oklahoma State and Baylor. They want to see some new blood in this conference championship game. Now, the last time these two faced one another, it was 17-14 with 2 minutes left. A defensive battle. I would expect the same. I don't know what the point total is for this one. I would take the under. I don't think there's going to be a ton of points. Baylor most likely will be missing their starting quarterback. That obviously does not help them either. It's the bizarro Big 12. The championship game is coming down to two defensive teams that neither one may score more than 20 points. And for Oklahoma State, obviously, what's on the line is important as well. You got to win this game to try to get into the playoff. They need to win. They need a little bit of help. And they could go to the playoff this year for Mike Gundy. Number five on my list of most interesting conference title games, I then go to the Pac-12, which is tonight, Oregon and Utah. Here's what's interesting to me. Oregon still has an outside shot. They'll need some chaos. They'll need some help. But if we get to a situation where we're trying to pick two lost teams, Oregon, as a Pac-12 champion, who would then have beaten one of the teams that beat them, they would make a pretty good case if we're going to take a two-loss team. So they play Utah tonight. Kyle Whittingham's an underrated coach who does really well in postseason games. But Oregon all-time 4-0 in conference championships. And how about this? This is the eighth time we've had a rematch in a Pac-12 championship from a regular season game. The loser of the regular season game has won the rematch 6 of 7 times. So whichever team loses the first matchup, they've won the second matchup 6 out of 7. That would be Oregon in this case. Oregon played terrible. It was the worst game of their season. Probably the worst game under Mario Cristobal against Utah a couple of weeks ago. It looked like they were not mentally in the game. They lost by 30. They made some special teams mistakes. They turned over the football. I think they'll have a better performance tonight. That was on the road. This will be a neutral site. I think they play better tonight against Utah. And I even think Oregon wins the game. I think they bounce back, they win the game, and if they get enough help this weekend, who knows? Maybe we're talking about Oregon sneaking into the playoff when we come back after the weekend. And therefore, lastly on my list, number 6 is the Big Ten title game. Because to me, while it's important, Michigan needs to win to go to the playoff, it's just not exciting. This is going to be a tough watch. The Big Ten usually is outside of Ohio State. For this game here, you have 2 good defenses with running attacks. I don't think it's going to be very exciting. Michigan against Iowa. Now, Michigan's favored by 10.5. I think Michigan probably covers. I think they certainly win the game. You worry about a potential letdown for Michigan, which is hard to even think about when you're talking about a conference title game. But wouldn't it be so, Jim Harbaugh, to finally beat Ohio State and then follow it up with a loss in the conference championship when you're favored by double digits? I don't think it happens, but keep an eye out for that. In terms of the game itself, Iowa, we know, has a really good defense. If they can stop the run for Michigan, they can hang in there. That's usually the case for most games, if you can make a team one-dimensional. But we know Michigan is better when they can run the football. And for Iowa, if you can force them to then throw the football, Iowa's a very opportunistic defense. You try to get some turnovers. And that's what it's going to take to beat Michigan. That's what it's going to take to keep up, to be able to score enough points to hang with Michigan. You're going to need some short fields, maybe a defensive score, and plus, the great thing about a turnover, it keeps the other team from scoring while giving you a better chance from scoring. That's what Iowa's going to need tomorrow to try to beat Michigan. They're going to need some turnovers, and it's probably going to come if you can stop the run game first and foremost. Then you try to take advantage of the short field, score some points that way, because otherwise, I don't know how the Iowa offense is going to score a whole bunch against Michigan tomorrow. And that's how I would rank the conference championship games this weekend. In terms of what's most important for college football, yeah, you look at the games that have the playoff impact. The SEC, the American, the Big 12, and the Big 10. But I looked at this in terms of what am I looking forward to watching the most. It's clearly the SEC number 1, but then the ACC number 2, the AAC number 3 because of Cincinnati. Can they finish this off? The Big 12, the Pac-12, and then the Big 10 in that order. That's how I would rank them in terms of what I'm most interested in seeing this weekend. I'll give you my breakdown of the best NFL games of the weekend coming up next hour for our usual top 5 that we do every Friday. Before we go, though, you can always join the conversation. You can give us a call, 843-721-9500. Let's first go to the phones because Sam is with us. Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Good. How are you doing, guys? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. What's up?
Hey, just said, have you guys heard about Charleston versus Furman tonight at 7?
Yes, big game. Looking forward to it.
So here's a real question. So I was at the TD Arena yesterday to watch the film with my basketball team.
Yeah.
They have a red captain for Furman this year. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they do have a tough game. Were you able to give the team some pointers when you were watching the film? Did you try to give them some tips that could help them win the game tonight?
I've been always telling them a couple of years ago when Coach Earl Green was here, always telling them, guys, listen, stop the fouling, let's get the points on the board, and don't focus on the scoreboard, focus on yourself.
I like it.
If we get this win, Luke, we'll be 6-2.
That's right. Well, what do you think? Do you think they get the win tonight? Do you think College of Charleston does win this game?
Well, they better step it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But, second question to ask you. Do you know what channel the game is on tonight?
Which game? The College of Charleston game?
Yeah, because I have, there's an app called Flow Sports. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, Flow Sports, yes.
Is it televised?
I'm sure it'll be on Flow Sports. I think that's online only. It's not a very good source. Flow Sports, quite frankly, they don't do a very good job. All other conferences have gone with ESPN, and for whatever reason, their conference, the CAA, has been with Flow Sports. They just re-upped that contract this past offseason. I don't know why. Flow Sports, I think, is lousy. But, yes, it should be on Flow Sports, at least online. But better yet, Sam, why watch it when you can hear it? And you can hear it on our sister station, 7 o'clock tip-off, so coverage will begin at 6:30, as Everett will be on the call over on our sister station, which is what, College of Charleston is, 94.7? What's it on?
Yeah, 94.7 and FM and 910 AM.
There you go. 7 o'clock tonight, coverage begins at 6:30. It is a big game. Furman and College of Charleston, obviously both in the state. For our mid-majors in this area, maybe the two best, both off to 5-2 starts, so it should be a good one tonight.
And do you think our good buddy Everett German is going to swing by Vic's Pizza and see if they've improved since your visit there?
You know what? He can let me know. He should swing by just to update me. If you're unfamiliar, I went there when I was in Greenville. I don't know. Maybe that was 2 years ago now. And they're a pizza place. And I walk in there and they say, oh, we're out of dough. We can't make you any pizza. What can you make? You're a pizza place. How do you run out of dough? Couldn't make me a pizza. I forgot what they offered. It's all we have left on the menu, we could do this. It was probably like a Greek salad or something. I said, nope, I'm going somewhere else. No, thank you. I came for pizza. You don't have dough. What kind of how can you call yourself a pizza place when you don't have any dough to make the pizza?
Or could they have run out because people were ordering and
yeah, I mean, I guess
stuff.
It's a good sign, sure. But come on. You got to have dough. You have to have the dough in the back, the reserve dough ready to go. I might as well call myself a pizza place. I have no dough. I can't make you a pizza. But that's what they told me that night, and they're supposed to be a pizza place. You come over to my house, it's a pizza restaurant as well. I got no dough. I can't make you a pizza, but I might as well call myself Vic's as well. I'm still bitter over that. I haven't made it back since. When we come back, Notre Dame announced their new head coach. They're promoting their defensive coordinator. I was thinking about this yesterday. We touched on the show yesterday, but then I was thinking about it last night. I have a theory about why this won't work. Plus, fake accents. We'll get to that as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
That's right, a Carolina Christmas. That's what we're getting ready for. Carolina Christmas from Terry Gore here, bringing us back on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. 3 weeks from today, Christmas Eve. We'll be here before you know it as we get in the holiday spirit around here. Also getting in the conference championship weekend spirit as well. I gave you my rundown of all the big conference championship games this weekend. Last segment, if you ever miss anything with the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. I got some thoughts we'll get to on Notre Dame promoting Marcus Freeman as their new head coach. That goes along with a theory I have. And also, we have to get to fake accents with some audio from Brian Kelly that you've probably heard by now. But we'll touch on that as well, because that's something interesting. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. In the meantime, let's go to the phones. Well, that doesn't sound good. You can give us a call back. Looks like we lost target number one. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
I'm target number two.
That's right.
I want, if Sam's still listening, to compliment him for his interview last night on Channel 4.
Oh.
He was at where the Christmas tree lighting is, and three Christmas trees they lit. I don't know why three. They showed it on TV, and then there's the word joy, and it's all around town. They got four areas, and it's a stand-up about 5 feet high, and then they interview Sam, and Sam gave a three-minute speech on what joy should be in the city. I'm going to tell you something. Sam is pretty intelligent. He did that off the cuff, and he was good. I compliment Sam. I never met Sam, but when you hear the voice, you know Sam. I couldn't believe it, and that's why I'm calling to tell you he did an excellent job. I don't know if you can look it up or anything else, but Sam should be complimented for what he did.
Yeah, now, I'm going to have to look it up.
Now,
I had no
idea. Thing, I know I'm allowed two things. My other thing is, here's my prediction. Mm-hmm. Ohio State will lose their coach. He's going to go to the Chicago Bears, which I hate for it to happen because supposedly the reason is he can help Justin Fields. Justin Fields is struggling a little bit, and that's supposed what's going to happen. Well, in a way, I think that's great because Ohio State's not getting the 4 and 5 stars that they normally get since Urban Meyer's gone. And you remember what Jim Harbaugh said. He made that comment, you know, you started with a man on third, but you haven't made it home. And that's because the team he got it was loaded, and it isn't as loaded right now as it was before. They're hurting defensive backs. They're hurting with a defensive line. Offensive line is fair. So that's my prediction, and I want you to etch it down and record it because you watch. Day is going, and the new coach will switch over from Cincinnati and be at Ohio State. You watch it. He played there.
Right, yeah, Luke Fickell, yeah.
Yeah, you watch it.
All right.
That's my prediction, sir. And, by the way, you were wrong last night. I was right, and we'll just go from there. You took New Orleans in the points. I couldn't see it, but it was a bad football game, a bad football game.
Yeah, it was. You should never I made the mistake of trying to count on Taysom Hill, and that was a big-time mistake. Sometimes you overthink things. And I gave you my rundown yesterday, you know, and it's I thought it was a bad matchup for Taysom Hill and the Saints, but I like a 6.5 point dog at home, which is also what's tempting me with Alabama, Georgia. I think Georgia's the better team. Georgia should beat Alabama, but you're going to give me Saban with 6.5 points. I'll give you my official picks later, but I'm still on the fence with that one. It's very tempting. It's the head versus the heart. And last night with the Saints, I think I just overthought things, made the wrong decision. Should have clearly saw that the Cowboys would be able to handle Taysom Hill in New Orleans. 843-721-9500. Let's go back to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you? Ricardo! All right. That's twice now. Two strikes. Next one, you're out. The last two times we tried to go to Ricardo. All we hear is, it's like we're in a wind tunnel over there. So, anyways. Speaking of Ryan Day, you know, that would be interesting. You can see the clear connection going to Chicago to work with Justin Fields. It's why many thought Joe Brady would wind up in Cincinnati with Joe Burrow, but Zach Taylor seems to be doing just fine there. Brady, not so much with the Panthers. But Ryan Day plays into this whole theory I have about Notre Dame's new hire, and we'll get to that coming up. Plus, fake accents, which also involves at least now a former Notre Dame coach. We'll help to get to that coming up as well. We'll wrap up hour one when we return. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The last thing we need are more bowl games. We'll get to that in just a moment as we wrap up Hour 1 on a Football Friday. We'll preview all the games in the NFL for this weekend. Coming up next hour, I'll give you the most interesting games to watch in the NFL this Sunday. We'll circle back to some thoughts on Notre Dame. We'll continue to get ready for the conference championships in college football over the next 36 hours. But they announced yesterday that they're adding a new bowl game this year. So now we're up to 42 bowls, which means 84 bowl-eligible teams. So here's what happened. We originally had 82 spots for teams in bowl games. But this year, we had 83 bowl-eligible teams. So Hawaii, who is 6-7, they played 13 games. Since they had a losing record, the only team that had six wins and a losing record, they were going to be left out. And then they figured, well, you know what? Let's just make another bowl, and we'll get Hawaii in there. So they came up with another bowl yesterday. I don't know if they have a name for it yet. The new bowl game in Texas, I doubt that's the name of it, new bowl game. But they're adding one in Texas that's going to allow Hawaii to play Memphis. Date to be determined. It'll be on ESPN, yada, yada, yada. So you could tell me how important these bowl games are, but you just made one up yesterday just so you could get Hawaii and now, in this case, Memphis in the game. These bowl games, enough already. Enough of the bowl games. Stop, oh, just because they've won six games. They were 6-7. Sorry, you weren't one of the 82 best teams in college football this year. Like, oh, don't worry. We'll make a new bowl game just for you to be in it. And you want to tell me how important these bowl games are and get upset when players don't go and play in the bowl games. They're just making them up at this point. Keep that name. Call it the new bowl. Call it Manute Bowl for all I care. You're just making things up now just so you can get these teams in there. Why? Because it's a way to make more money. You get a sponsor on this thing. You'll sell some tickets. I don't think many people will go watch Hawaii against Memphis. Nobody cares. Some people will watch it on TV. You'll sell advertising, and you make money off of it. But stop telling me that these bowl games are important when you're just making them up now just so we can make sure we get all these teams in. God forbid one six-win team misses out this year on playing in a meaningless bowl.
Now, speaking of all these bowl-eligible teams, there's one local team that's bowl-eligible.
Yes.
Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
Okay, they went to a bowl game last year because they won the Sun Belt. And, of course, that's not the case this year. What would the Coastal following, where would they like to see them, the Chanticleers, go this year? And be realistic.
You got some options, suggestions?
Well, I don't know if, what used to be the Belk Bowl in Charlotte.
Cool.
Then again, they might take somebody from like the ACC and SEC, that, you know, kind of thing. That's what they usually do. And they did not take our suggestion and turning it into the Ric Flair Bowl when Belk's sponsorship ended.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Why not? They're just making up all these other bowls. Why not have the Ric Flair Bowl? He'll sponsor it. Last I saw, they said they may keep them and play in their own backyard there, the bowl game that they have up there. That wouldn't be good. You want to actually go travel. You want to go somewhere unique. I have no idea where Coastal Carolina will go. Hopefully it's somewhere fun. Hour 2 coming up next. We'll preview the weekend of the NFL. It's the Mormon Midday Show on ESPN Radio.